Welcome to the AIPT Comics Podcast. My name is David Brick, and you're here at episode 118. I'd like to know whether you've done 117 of these, or if this is your first. Either way, welcome. I'm here with Nathan Simmons.
Hey! How's
it going? It's almost as if we haven't done a lot of these already.
No,
before.
Never.
It's
never.
Almost like our first.
Right. Well, you gotta understand, here in Pensacola, we're dealing with a lot of stuff since the Godzilla attack.
I heard about that.
Yeah, when he attacked our very real robotics factory. It's difficult. We're trying to rebuild. Luckily our also real Chinatown district is a hub of activity. So I think we're gonna be okay.
Now I'm gonna ask you a question. Is Godzilla an alien or is he a native to Earth?
David, come on. Godzilla is depending on which version you're watching, is a lizard or dinosaur mutated by nuclear testing. There's one version where he's made up of all the souls of people who were killed by nuclear bombs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's a couple different versions. And, much like, Superman or your Spider-Mans, you can pick your favorite version.
I was just wondering, because we're going to have an alien expert on this show.
Yes.
To talk about many different types of aliens.
Yeah.
Be it Superman, alien,
right.
Proper, symbiotes.
Wow, he really does know his aliens.
Yes, Philip Kennedy Johnson is going to be on the show later to talk about all things comics. And there's a lot going on with him, particularly in the this week.
Yeah, for sure.
Due to Extreme Carnage being more unveiled by Marvel than ever. It's coming out in July.
And it's more extreme than ever.
It is. I want to know, do you think it's going to end with Extreme Carnage Beta? Because it starts with Extreme Carnage Alpha.
I don't know, but I do hope that it ends with like Extreme Carnage X Games.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
So Carnage is like on a BMX?
Yeah. And Tony Hawk's there.
And he does his last 900 and everyone reports on it and it's in the news for a week.
People forget that like Spider-Man was a playable character in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. So
that's true. That's canon.
That's canon. That's right.
We actually have a little bit of Philip Kennedy Johnson news in the news. Mm-hmm. And if this is the first time you've ever listened, this is the comic book podcast where we recap the biggest news of the week. Every week. We review our favorite books of the week. And then we give a little taste of what's to come next week.
That's right. Just a taste test.
But to start, news. Big news. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of Marvel news. I feel like a lot of weeks we just have a lot of Marvel news, and this is one of those weeks.
They haven't slowed down recently, for sure.
I heard that Marvel might stop publishing comics, but I don't think that's the case right
now. Isn't
that
a weird thing, how that comes up every year, and it's not ever
true? It really
true.
Is. Or people say that comics is failing and no one's making money on it. And then, like, sales come out.
Right.
And everyone's like, wow, there's a lot of money in this.
I used to work at a clothing store that rhymes with Schmott Topic. And I had a customer come in and buy, like, a Captain America t-shirt one time. And they were like, man, it was right after the first Avengers movie came out. And they're like, man, I really love that Avengers movie. You think they're going to make any more of those? And I was like,
oh, my God.
I'm pretty sure the movie that made as much money as Avatar is going to be fine.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah, no, I saw Tim Seeley, comic writer and artist, talk today this week about how comic sales are doing well because of comics, not because of... because of the movies or because of like merchandise.
He was pointing out that it's been over a year since we've had a new Marvel movie. So they've got to be doing something right for people to still be going out to buy comic books.
And one of those things that they're doing right, especially at Marvel Comics, is publish more X-Men books.
Yeah, always it's printing money at this point.
So almost randomly, because we're still about a week or two away from the July Marvel solicitations, but out of nowhere, Marvel revealed a timeline for their X books, and three of the books we already knew about. Children of the Atom is already out. Way of X is coming out in a week or two. X-Corp is coming out in May, and then they revealed Jerry Duggan and Pepe Larraz are going to be taking over X-Men, and it'll be called X-Men number one. There's restarting the numbering. And then there's a classified book by Leah Williams and Valeria Shitty. And then finally in September, Jonathan Hickman and Redacted will be doing a mysterious question mark title.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the question from DC Comics.
Maybe.
Just throwing it out
there. I do love Redacted's artwork, and I'm excited to see them getting more traction at the big two.
This actually got posted on Reddit, and someone was doing like math with the lettering you can barely see behind
Redacted.
They were
trying to figure out the spacing. They're like, I know the first word is the for the classified book.
For the Redacted artist.
Oh, yeah.
They are fairly certain it says artist.
That would be incredible.
Okay, here's my guess who's going to be the artist. Sure. It's either going to be Ryan Ottley.
Okay.
Because he's stopped doing Spider-Man and he's been kind of like waiting around.
Right.
Uh-huh. Or they just announced Romita Jr. coming back. Maybe he's got an X-Men book.
That would be that's an interesting pairing. Yeah.
Could be good.
And that'd be a huge, book to hand over too. I mean, again, we don't know what the book is, but it's Hickman. So it's like, you know, the architect of new X-Men.
Yeah.
It's going to be something big for sure.
Maybe it's like X-Men, the encyclopedia, and it's just like 7,000 words each month.
Yeah.
Detailing.
What if it's just called like the Uncanny Gang and it's just like little X-Men, like having misadventures?
That would be amazing. We'd also all be very worried for Hickman if maybe he fell down and hit his head.
Right.
Who knows?
He just woke up screaming, "The Uncanny Gang!" And everyone's like, "Get in here, everybody."
There are two things I saw online as well, mm-hmm. people mad about. One is, why are they renumbering X-Men? And then the other is, do we really need more books? My poor, poor wallet. And
I mean,
to both, I don't know if it's really warranted.
Well, I get the frustration. I do, because I like legacy numbering. Like, I'm really big into, we were just talking about this last week, how it was great that there was some book that was getting a new creative team and they weren't relaunching the numbering. And that was really exciting. And
Nightwing is one of them.
Do I know? Nightwing. Yeah. Oh yeah. Nightwing. The fact that they took over at 78 and didn't mm-hmm. think to like restart it is really nice. I don't know why I said it's nice, but yeah, no, I feel that as a Batman fan also, like when there's nine, core titles, like none of them are like outliers. Everything kind of ties into the same big storyline. I mean, it's right. In the X-Men line, really the only ones that feel like you could read them solo are Wolverine and maybe Cable, but even that like heavily relies on the main title.
No, yeah, and Cy Spurrier, I spoke to him briefly a week or two ago about Way of X, and he was like, this is a core title.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to write the book that's not a core title, because then, sales might be so good, but also you want everyone to be reading your work.
Right, absolutely.
And that's kind of why they keep adding titles, not necessarily because we need them, but because they're selling, you're buying it. They're going to keep adding titles to this until you stop buying.
And I think that's the argument for a lot of series doing backup stories now too, like bringing back the backup story aspect of comics, because maybe you wouldn't buy a Grifter or a Midnighter book. I mean, I would,
right.
But like you would buy Batman Urban Legends, which has them in it, or, Superman, which has, Midnighter,
No, totally. Would you buy a Moon Knight book?
Yeah. 1,000%.
Because you can in July.
Yeah. How about that?
So last week, C.B. Sobolski teased that there's going to be some Moon Knight news, and he wasn't wrong. Mm-hmm. Apparently, Jed McKay and Alessandra Cappuccio are going to be doing this book in July. It's coming out July 7th, and it will be spinning out of the Avengers story arc, Age of Konoshu, I think wrapped up maybe 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. And that was a story where Moon Knight, the god behind Moon Knight, who gives him his powers, mm-hmm. took over the Earth. And it was like a 6-issue story.
Yeah, Marvel Universe can't catch a break. I mean, this is happening during King in Black, so.
Right.
They're just having a bad time.
Really bad time. Stay tuned to AAPT Comics Podcast, because we'll be having Jed McKay on next week to talk about this and Magic,
I'm so the Gathering, excited.
Other titles.
I mean, we had a feeling, that Moon Knight was going to be making a comeback, especially with the, the Disney Plus series in the works, but...
yeah, of course.
Not this, like, quickly. Also, that Steve McNiven cover is just so dope.
Yeah, McNiven's amazing. Mm-hmm. He doesn't work a lot, but when he does, it always dazzles. Like, when he...
1,000%.
When they did The Return of Wolverine, he did a couple of those covers, and mm-hmm. they were amazing. I think he did the first issue, even. Yeah, he did.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in Marvel Comics news... there was a classified symbiote mm-hmm. With some Lionel Francis Yu and Sonny Go art that we were postulating last week. Who could it be? I said Cosmic. What did I say? Mr. Universe? Wait, Captain Universe?
You said Captain Universe. I said it was Nightwatch.
Yes. Well, it turns out, and this is a spoiler if you haven't read Venom or King in Black number 5, but it turns out Flash Thompson's back.
Agent Anti-Venom, baby.
Yeah, he has the white suit and guns still.
Yeah.
So he's still into guns. Even though he died, came back to life, he didn't find God.
I mean, even when Frank Castle found God, he got magic angel guns, so...
Yeah, what the hell, Flash? You could have done better than this. No, but this is going to be part of Philip Kennedy Johnson's Extreme Carnage Alpha. And then also this week, actually on Friday, Marvel dropped two one-shot mm-hmm. reveals. One's for Scream and one is for Phage.
Yep.
Phage?
Phage.
Phage. So Marvel revealed that this is an event, Extreme Carnage.
Yeah.
But don't worry, it's a one-shot event. So
interesting.
I guess you can read each one whether you want to or not, and yet it's all connected at the same time as well.
Yeah, I mean, kind of like the Scream King and Black tie-in they just did.
Essentially, it's taking that core group of symbiotes mm-hmm. that are from Earth.
From the Life Foundation.
Yeah, and giving them a little fun stories. Steve Orlando is doing the Phage story. Mm-hmm. And Clay McLeod Chapman is doing the Scream story. When he's written Scream, gosh, like 5 times now in the last 5 years.
Right.
They keep giving him these like small arcs or one shots.
I feel like Marvel is trying to position Scream as like a bigger character, and I'm here for it because I was very much surprised by how much I liked that that Scream one shot from a few weeks back because you recommended it to me. You were like, if you like Demo Goblin and you like over the top action, like go for it. And yeah, it was a pleasant surprise.
She has a unique angle to the symbiotes that, you know, Venom and Carnage are very similar. They're similar to all the other symbiotes mm-hmm. in their own ways, but she has
like supernatural powers.
And she has like a heroic element to her that is based in pain, which I think is interesting. Mm-hmm. Also in Marvel Comics news, do you like Jabba the Hutt?
Sure. I mean, you know, he's got his issues.
Yeah, I mean, it's not healthy wanting to enslave people and drop them into pits.
Right.
And he is also dead, but if we go back to prequel land, mm-hmm. he's not. He's still alive. And apparently he will be in a one-shot that'll tie into the War of the Bounty Hunters event, the new crossover Star Wars event that starts in May. But Jabba gets his own tale. Yay. So this is a story, if you don't know. If you've seen Empire Strikes Back, Boba Fett, spoilers if you haven't seen Empire Strikes Back, captures Han Solo.
He sure does. No disintegrations.
No, he's locked in carbonite. Mm-hmm. And this event apparently reveals that Boba didn't just take him off and sell him or whatever.
Oh, yeah, he had to Jabba fight the Hutt to keep him, right?
Yes, exactly. Some people are snatching him out from underneath him or whatever. We don't really know what's going to happen. But yes, all these other characters are going to try to steal Han Solo. So I'm sure we'll find out that, I don't know, what could be the worst thing that could happen? Like,
yeah, no, what's kind of cool is that they've teased it with a bunch of like different headshot posters. There's Valance the Hunter and Dr. Aphra and you know, some guy named Darth Vader. I'm wondering what the deal is with that character.
Yeah,
but it looks really fun. It's a cool concept for a crossover, and again, it sounds like one that you can you don't necessarily have to read each one shot for, but it's gonna be cool to see like this storyline from all these different points of view.
Yeah, Giuseppe Comicoli did these covers and they're mm-hmm. almost like wanted posters.
Yes. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Which goes with the theme really well. Also in Marvel Comics news, if you read Empire last summer, you know that there was supposed to be a Black Panther tie-in and a Thor tie-in.
Right. Uh-huh.
But they got canceled. Ram V was going to do the Thor title and Jim Zub was going to do the Black Panther title. Well, this week, Jim Zub revealed that a new collection coming out later in the year is going to feature unpublished pages from his Black Panther story. Not the whole story, because I don't think they got to finish it.
Right, yeah. He did say that some of them are colored, some of them are just are inked. But he said that they stopped production halfway through making the second issue of the tie-in. So mm-hmm. they're just kind of putting a little bit of it out there to let people know what could have been.
Which is, I think, maybe the first of its kind of this happening, because I don't know, I don't think publishers have ever cut short their tie-in plans last minute like this, of course, because there's never been a pandemic like this. Right. Also, if you read Empire and enjoyed it, mm-hmm. I don't remember if Black Panther, the tie-in not existing, mattering that much, but with Thor, there are literal scenes where characters are like, hey, remember where Thor went? And then someone's like, yeah, isn't it crazy? And you're sitting there going, no, we don't know.
We'll never know. Yeah, the only times I can think of something like this happening in recent history was DC published the last couple of issues of Lucifer only in trade, but that was, you know, those were finished issues. They weren't, held up from the pandemic and everything. But I can't think of one where it was an incomplete work like this, at least in recent times.
I want to know why. I mean, I understand Marvel wanted to scale back Empire because they didn't know what the market was going to be like during a pandemic. Mm-hmm. But I still think they could have put out Thor and Black Panther and maybe sold them and it would have been fine. I don't know. Yeah. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, with the pandemic, I mean, a lot of it in the rearview mirror, it's hard to say what we could have done differently on a lot of levels.
Yeah, hindsight is 2020.
Thank God.
Moving on from Marvel Comics. If you hate Marvel Comics, you're in the best part of the show, because we're not going to talk about it again. Actually, I'm looking at our notes, and no, we're not going to talk about it until maybe Judging by the Cover.
Yeah.
Anywho, there's a couple new series reveals this week, because throughout each month, we find out new titles are coming. Mm-hmm. 3 or 4 months ahead. This way, comic shops can make their ordering happen. But Beyond the Breach number one from Aftershock's on the way. This looks like a really cool title. It's written by Ed Brisson with art by Damian Cosiero. I remember looking him up on Twitter to try to find him when I was tagging him in the news. And he doesn't have a ton of followers, so I assume he's quite new to this. But the art is insanely cool.
Yeah, with some weird extra-dimensional gory stuff. But then also like a cute little gremlin, Mogwai-looking dude.
Yeah, that's true.
It looks like it's... Yeah, it looks very strange.
There's a Declan Shalvey variant cover that looks really cool, too.
Yeah.
It's cool to see Ed Brisson working again. I know that Predator was delayed, but I assume it'll be resolicited when Marvel starts working with Penguin, but...
Yeah, that's the hope.
With that and this, and I think he has another series. He just had a Ghost Rider one-shot tied into King in Black. He wasn't doing a lot for a couple months there, so it's cool to see him back.
Yeah, for sure.
Dark Horse also revealed a fantasy graphic novel called Rewild coming out this October to comic book shops. Mm-hmm. This is from Burger Books line that's working with Dark Horse Comics. Mm-hmm. This looks really cool.
Love the title.
We only have cover art. But yeah, the title's cool. And then it's written by Devin Grayson with art by Jana Adamovic. So it's beautifully written and illustrated. Devin and Jana have created captivating characters in a timely tale while reality, myth, and magic overlap, Karen Berger said. I feel like we don't get enough fantasy series like this. Like a visceral, strange. If you look at the cover art, there's something going on with like towers and fire. Maybe it ties into like... real life reality.
I don't know. There's some kind of like environmental thing happening here for sure. Yeah, I'm really curious to find out more. It looks like, you know, like fairy magic stuff, which I'm always very cool with, you know. Got a very Neverwhere kind of vibe.
Not to mention it's a graphic novel, so they're not even releasing it as single issues. It's one story.
Right.
So there was a bunch of books sent back to print this week.
Yeah.
One is from Boom Studios that hasn't even come out yet. The Many Deaths of Layla Starr. This is from Rom V. This book is getting a second printing before it even released on April 14th. Mm-hmm. The second printing will be available May 5th. I wonder how this happens. Like,
right.
Is it because people didn't order in time and then they see how cool it is later? I guess.
Or they just have way more orders than they ever expected. So they decided to go ahead and shore up, you know, whatever's going to be left over.
There was it was like a year and a half ago now, though. Boom Studios, like every single one of their titles, I swear to God, went to third, fourth, fifth printings.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And Forrest and I were talking, like, is this legit? Or did they, like, screw around so they could keep bragging about books selling out?
Right. I don't know. I see people constantly talking about this book online, and I'm really looking forward to checking it out.
Yeah, it looks really cool. Mm-hmm. The Silver Coin is also getting a second printing, as well as Noctera number 2.
Yeah.
Noctera is just cleaning up from Kickstarter to issue 2.
Yeah.
When will it stop selling out?
It's also cool to see Silver Coin doing really well. It's a really good first issue, and I feel like people were really drawn in by the interesting approach to the anthology series.
Yeah, it is definitely unique. Also unique, AWA Studios officially announced support for artists to make NFTs and make all the profit off NFTs, as well as help them make NFTs if they so wish.
Yeah.
So this news was, if you look at the quotes, because they have not only the CEO, Bell Jemis, but also artists Mike Diodato Jr. And Mike Choi chime in as well. But based on what they say... It sounds very much like this is a reaction to a few weeks ago. DC Comics came out, or actually, it was a memo that got leaked, I believe.
Yeah,
and it basically said, if you make an NFT of Superman or any of our IP,
that belongs to us.
Yes, it's our money, not the artist's money. And so AWA is clearly, this is a reaction to that, saying, look at us, we're a great publisher, and we let you make all the money you want on NFTs.
But here's the problem, is that wasn't the only fucking problem with NFTs.
No, no, it wasn't, which is so bizarre.
It's excruciatingly bad for the environment. I mean, I'm not going to get super into it. I've dunked enough on the concept of NFTs on this show. It's just a real bummer to see publishers throwing so much weight behind it, especially publishers that put out work that I like, you know. It feels, I don't know. The best way I can describe it is that it's a real bummer. It's a real shame. And I think, you know, like when it came to Darwin Cook's widow reaching out to DC about it, you know, she said that it wasn't the money that was the issue. It was the environmental impact, you know. So even people who are being, you know, screwed over by NFTs being a proprietary thing, they're more concerned about the, you know, the environmental implications. I mean, by and large, at least from stories, things that I've seen online. I'm sure there's plenty of people who are also like, fuck yeah, let's do this. But that's lame.
No, yeah. If you live on Twitter at all and you follow a lot of comic creators,
sure.
I would say a large majority of them are against. There are some are openly selling NFTs and they don't see any problem with it. But
it's not popular for sure.
No, and when it's not popular, the creators are like, I will never work with an artist who sells this.
Right.
Or you know, of equal like anger and frustration,
sure.
Which is understandable because it is terrible for the environment. So it is surprising that a company like AWA would so outspokenly say this.
Mm-hmm.
And potentially, now they think they're going to bring in more artists because, look, you can make NFTs at our publishing house.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. It seems like... It seems like a misguided attempt at being more artist friendly, but it instead does that by throwing in with a movement that is by and large very unpopular and potentially dangerous.
Also, it's not only just unpopular; it's confusing. A lot of people still don't understand it.
Oh, sure.
It also like it's a system that may or may not actually continue to bring in money for people.
That's the other thing is the market's already fucking crashing. So like,
right.
Why are we doing this?
In other news, Image, Skybound Entertainment have announced that they'll be doing variant covers to celebrate AAPI's Heritage Month. Every cover will be penciled by Asian or AAPI heritage creators, and all proceeds go to the CCED. Which is an LA-based nonprofit.
Awesome.
For community and equitable development.
Yeah.
So they have a couple covers. I think it's something like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, like 8 or 9 covers for this. But it's a cool act by Skybound and Image to be doing something like this.
Yeah, for sure.
I see more of this happening, which is great too.
And they're putting it on like big books too. I mean, it's not, you know, this isn't
just a couple of
random issues. We're getting it on Walking Dead Deluxe, Ultra Mega, Stillwater, Birthright. I mean, they're really trying to push this, which is pretty rad.
It's always good when there's like nonprofit involvement as well. Speaking of nonprofit,
go ahead.
Last week we spoke on and on. We spoke for like 10 minutes on DC Comics doing a bracketed
round robin
voting round robin. Yeah. And where they had pitted potential future titles that they will produce, but only if there's a winner.
Yeah, without telling us who the creative teams were,
right.
And also maybe unfairly stacking the deck in a couple of situations.
They seemed to pit some titles against other titles that you knew one would win over the other.
It seemed that way, yeah.
So the first round is over, and we got to see some of the winners.
Okay, so we've got Green Lanterns, Underworld on Fire, Zatanna and the King of Nightmares, Lobo, Animal Man, Scorched Earth, Robbins, Blue Beetle, Graduation Day, Jesse Quick, Control, Suicide Squad 7, and Superman and Lois, Ignition.
Wow.
Some of these are really, like, some of these titles immediately grab me. I mean, Lobo, Animal Man is just such an insane thing that I have to see what that is.
Yeah, that's a weird combo.
Mm-hmm. I will say I'm disappointed that Round Robin isn't like about, like, they're not doing a book called Round Robin that's like a thick Dick Grayson.
That's funny. What if this whole thing was a sham and the winner is Round Robin? Their Round Robin logo just slides down into the center and it's like, they're the real winners. Yeah. Gotcha.
And it's Gail Simone writing a book about just how hot Dick Grayson is, and I'd read every issue.
Now, are we talking like his buttocks is round?
Yes.
Or is it... Okay.
Yeah, thick.
I was wondering if the pecs
no
were also round.
No. Don't be ridiculous.
So head on over to DC Comics' Twitter and vote again. yeah. The final round will run May 20 through May 27. So we have quite a ways to go before this ridiculous thing is over. Yeah. May the best comic series win, which won't probably happen.
Which yeah, might not happen.
I still wonder if maybe the ones that have fallen off won't ever be made. But I still wonder at some stage, maybe the final four will all be made. Or at least the final two will be made.
Yeah, there's somewhere right? I'm like, just like, some of these ideas are so cool that like it seems wrong to just chuck them outright, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. Mm-hmm. There's a lot wrong with this, but a lot right.
It's an odd thing all around.
In our segment, our top books of the week, we're going to talk about our top two favorite comics. Woo! Out this week. This week only, they came out. You could probably still get them in a couple weeks. Don't worry if you can't make it to the comic book shop.
Yeah.
But they did just come out. Mm-hmm. David, what is your second favorite book of the week?
My second favorite book of the week was The Silver Coin, number one, by Chip Zdarsky and Michael Walsh.
Mm.
And I think it was yours as well.
Oh my God, we did it again.
I think, just judging from this document I'm reading...
Someone go hit the Britney Spears button that goes, oops, sorry, I made that joke.
Is that a thing?
No, it's not.
Okay.
No. I want to have one of those boards, though, where I have buttons and it's like, zing!
Oh, I miss soundboards. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, do you remember when they had those, like, those sound machines for, like, actors, like Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yes. Yeah.
And, like, you'd click all the, yeah.
Do you remember when you could call, there was an app that you gave your friend's phone number to, and it would call with a pre-recorded message from Samuel L. Jackson telling them to go see Snakes on a Plane?
I don't remember that.
That was a real thing.
I should do that for comics.
It was, I sent one to, like, my buddy Ryan, and it was just like, hey, Ryan, what are you doing this weekend, motherfucker? It was so good. I'm not going to even try to do a Sam Jackson impression.
No.
He's the king.
I did have the Waze app where Jay Leno would tell me to take a left.
Oh,
or
sure.
Right,
you can download Eddie Izzard's voice for that now.
Oh, I should do that.
Yeah.
I love Eddie Izzard.
Yeah. So the silver
the coin.
Silver coin.
Let me tell you about the silver coin.
We talked about it a little bit last week because I think it was my most anticipated book for this week. But it's a anthology series. Every issue is illustrated by Michael Walsh, and. Each issue will have a different writer attached. This first issue was written by Chip Zdarsky, and it involves a rock band who's down on their luck finding a magical coin that starts to make people like their music, makes them play better, but it also might be driving the lead singer insane.
It's also set in the 70s, right? When disco's high.
In the 70s, 1978. Yeah, so these punks are getting run out by disco and trying to decide whether or not they're going to sell out or keep playing to no one forever.
Yeah.
And again, I feel like I gravitate towards books where I'm like, oh, I get it. But I...
Sure. No, yeah.
But the... it's a fascinating first issue. The artwork is just fantastic. It has this very kind of grungy, sketchy quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
The lettering is incredible, particularly during the rock and roll sequences. The lyrics kind of jut out of the page and they look like they're being snarled at you. And it's just got this very... a heavy Twilight Zone-esque energy to every interaction where you're not really sure what you're supposed to be taking from certain, you know, certain bits of dialogue. There's a conversation between the lead singer and his father that is just loaded with history and unspoken hatred. It's a really great, very heavy, but very... quick read, actually. It's something I've reread twice now because there's just, I don't know, it really grabbed me like any good episode of Twilight Zone or Dark Shadows, what am I thinking of? Outer Limits. It just has that vibe to it.
Yeah, Michael Walsh colors, pencils, and letters this one too. So you don't get that very often with artists.
Right.
Yeah, there's some really trippy pieces of art here where like the character is playing the guitar with the coin and rocking out. People love it.
Yeah.
And he's like, literally like bending and twisting
and his fingers like shredding.
Oh, that's so gross, isn't it?
It's wild and it's not over the top violent up until like a certain point, but it is there's just a darkness to it. It's very it's an unsettling read, but it's really,
I think,
cool.
If you have any art, really, mm-hmm. it doesn't have to just be music, but if you're into art mm-hmm. of any kind, the idea that you could pick something up and become amazing and great overnight, I think it's something we've all probably thought about or dreamed about
sure.
happening to us. So it's highly relatable too.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Also kind of about like that obsession, right? The obsession about being better and being famous and
needing people kind of to respect you.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
There's also a really neat effect with like a shine on the page. It's almost as if Walsh took a picture of the page and there was like some kind of lighting issue, but it actually makes it kind of neat.
No, it is. Yeah, it almost like there's a lacquer over everything.
Yeah, it added like a texture to it mm-hmm. that I wasn't expecting. That's really
100%.
Cool. No, that's a really good second pick. That's why it's my second pick too. But what was your favorite comic?
Oh, man, my favorite comic of the week was The Swamp Thing number 2 by Ram V and Mike Perkins. This comic is just everything. Every issue from them. I mean, they've two into this series, but also the previous Future State book. They just really get at what makes this character and its legacy so interesting. The book is played as though that, well, the concept is that every single night the main character goes to sleep. And when he wakes up, he's transformed into the Swamp Thing, and he's on the, you know, on the other side of the country fighting against this unstoppable zombie-like force called the Pale Wanderer. And because of that, the whole book feels like a waking nightmare. There's, you know, extreme close-ups and moments where it looks like the main character is falling apart or doesn't really know where he stands. And it's all about becoming something new, something better. The Pale Wanderer refers to both of them as ideas, which is really fascinating because they, in practice, very much resemble, you know, Alec Holland as Swamp Thing and Anton Arcane, the avatar of the Rot from so many classic Swamp Thing stories. And it does feel like a point is being made that like these archetypes will exist forever because we need them to.
Ooh, that's cool.
And the artwork is just, there's some really great horror stuff. The fight between Swamp Thing and the Pale Wanderer is not super like prolonged, but it leaves an impact because it just gets right to the point, gets right to I don't want to spoil it, but there's some like some truly gross visuals toward the end of the book. But it also starts to widen the scope of the book to include the rest of the DC universe. You actually finally see familiar characters pop up and references to familiar characters pop up toward the end of this issue. And it's firmly planting.
Oh, shit. I like it.
I almost said rooting and I was like, well, that's not, I can't do that. And then I said the worst word. Planting this character in the DC universe. And I'm really excited to see how the world reacts to a new Swamp Thing.
Yeah, that's really cool, isn't it? We haven't seen like a brand new kind of take on him in
right.
so long.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like not since like maybe Scott Snyder was doing it.
And even then it was Alec Holland, you know?
Right. Oh, that's cool. Nice pick, dude.
Thanks, bruh.
Whenever you pick something and I say, that's a great pick, I mean it.
I know.
But then it wasn't one of my top two. So
gotcha.
That means I lie. I'm lying
to
you.
No, it just means it's good. You mean that you appreciate that I liked it.
I do. I appreciate everything you do and say.
Thanks.
So my favorite book of the week was Nocterra number 2 by Scott Snyder and Tony S. Daniel.
Yeah.
So it was interesting reading this in part because when we interviewed Scott, like a month ago, there were things he kind of revealed that still haven't even happened in the series yet. But some of those things happened in this issue. Largely, we get a little bit more idea of like what happened and this idea of the darkness being something that people at first were like, well, maybe it's, you know, heaven. Maybe it's a rapture or whatever.
Right.
We're going to go to heaven. And like, there's like, it's all through captions, this part of the book. Mm-hmm. But like, as the story is going, we learn some of the characters are thinking, oh, well, our families, their gums are turning black.
Right.
But maybe this is just the first phase before they turn into angels or something like that.
No, they're just still trying to convince themselves.
Right. And like that aspect of it is truly horrifying.
Yeah.
Because I could totally see, I mean, anyone, even myself, who's, you know, believes in science, like, there's people rationalizing this horrible thing happening mm-hmm. because they can't understand it.
Why would it be happening otherwise? Don't. Yeah.
Right. And that is a very deeply scary thing that you can relate to in this book.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, it's cutting to the now in the story where our main character is being attacked by these vicious beasts as she drives through this these dark streets.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually getting to sort of a, what did they call it? They called it like a, not a pit stop, but a refuge mm-hmm. or it was safe, like a safe harbor, basically. Yeah, gotcha. We also get to see how people eat in this crazy world where, if you don't know, the skies turn black. Anything that was in the darkness for too long becomes a monstrous beast. That includes cats, rats, mouse, insects, etc. Usually they become even bigger than when they were alive and well. And we learn in this issue that people are eating these dark, twisted, monstrous things and hunting them or trapping them and then eating those. But yeah, so there's a lot of world building still going on. There's also more of an introduction of this scary character he's got some sort of like special black costume that's burned into right. his skin, right? Yeah. So there's like a scientific explanation for that too. So there's like a Mad Max feel to the book so far. There's characters chasing our heroes.
Mm-hmm.
They're in this lawless land where you could be murdered at any moment. Meanwhile, there's like actual science or at least some thought put into how any of this makes sense. Mm-hmm. So you got to appreciate that. So, and also it's action packed and it has good horror. So it has so many different elements that are working. And Tony S. Daniel, of course, is one of the best out there. I mean,
just crushing it. Yeah.
So detailed and really good at the character acting bits as well. So check out Nocterra number 2.
Awesome.
Yeah. Moving on to our top books for next week.
Mm-hmm.
What are we looking forward to? I sure hope DC stops publishing more Batman books because let me tell you, way too much Batman.
Yeah,
sorry, go ahead.
Too much, yeah, too much Batman, and certainly not for us, sir.
Every time I post news about a new Batman title, we get comments that are, "How? What? Why? Why Batman?" And then what happens? What happens? They buy it.
Yeah.
And DC's like, "Oh, okay, you want more? All right."
Yep.
Don't buy the mint chocolate chip if you don't want more mint chocolate chip is all I'm saying.
Don't buy the McRib. Stop it.
What was that sauce that Rick and Morty
made a whole thing? The Szechuan sauce?
Yeah, yeah. So my Szechuan sauce of next week is Batman the Detective comes out next week. Andy Kubert has not done a Batman book since working with Grant Morrison. Pretty good trade-off, I would say. Tom Taylor, amazing writer. He's done... I mean, almost all of my favorite books last year mm-hmm. were Suicide Squad books.
Mm-hmm.
His ability to write character, to pace the book well, I think that's something that's always really good with a Tom Taylor script, where the character comes through, but also it never gets stale. There's mm-hmm. no like heavy exposition moments. The book is always moving forward. Andy Kubert, one of the best. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the most iconic comics of your childhood you probably read
were
Andy Kubert drawn.
For sure.
And it looks like a ridiculous Batman story where he leaves Gotham for once and goes to Europe and does some crazy detective work.
And wears like a dope steampunky Batman costume.
I mean, hell yeah, right?
It's like, I guess I'm going to England, so I'll put on this. Yeah, no, it's awesome.
No, yeah, he has to fit in. You're right. He has to totally fit in. Expect surprises and my review next week. What are you looking forward to next week?
I'm also looking forward to Batman, but a very different kind of Batman book.
Yeah.
So I'm cheating a little bit because I think this one is already out on digital, but the print copy comes out next week. I'm looking forward to Batman and Scooby-Doo Mysteries number 1 by Ivan Cohen and Dario Brizuela. Look, there mm-hmm. are times when nostalgia bait rubs you the wrong way, but if there's like one pairing that will always get my butt in a seat or in a comic shop, it's Batman and Scooby-Doo.
There are only a few universal truths for you.
Really, genuinely, it's one of my sincerest joys is seeing Batman and Scooby-Doo together.
Right.
Like Ivan Coen's written a lot of great tie-in books in the past. Particularly, he wrote Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? He's written he did the Green Lantern animated series tie-in book, which was really fun. And Brizuela has done Scooby-Doo Team Up for I think dozens of issues, which is fantastic. So this is like a dream team for this first book. It's a first issue of 12, and it actually follows the gang. The Mystery Inc. gang is looking for Batman's purple gloves from the 1930s, which have been stolen. So, like, it's wow. Just such a goofy premise. It hits all the right buttons for me. I can't wait to read it. I've been, like, purposefully holding off so I can go buy a physical copy of it.
Did you specifically not want to read it digitally, or
no,
you just wanted to own it?
I want to own it. The cover art is so great. It just, there's something about, I was also pre-pandemic, pre-hurricane destroying my LCS a couple years ago, I was buying Scooby-Doo Team Up every month. It's so much fun. I mean, they were doing weird things with DC characters. Scooby-Doo meets Zatanna. They did an issue of Scooby-Doo meets Swamp Thing. You know, like it was exactly the kind of book I wanted.
It's kind of kooky, right? It's kooky and fun.
It's
and
fun
out there.
And there's just, it's such a like an obvious pairing for kids. Like it, like how is this not a book that's been on the shelves every month for years? You know what I mean?
Right. Right. No, yeah. When I was writing the news for this, God, it was like 3 months ago now. It looked kooky enough and unique enough to be worthy of anyone's attention.
Oh, guys, if you haven't watched it, Warner Brothers released a Batman Brave and the Bold meets Scooby-Doo direct-to-video movie a couple of years ago, and it's great. It follows up on the Brave and the Bold cartoon series from like 10 years ago, and it's fantastic. Diedrich Bader is Batman. Jeffrey Combs as the Question rules.
Moving on. Judging by the cover, Junior, we're going to talk about our number one most anticipated, favoritest ever for next week.
Yeah.
Cover art.
Yeah.
So I picked Unstoppable Spider-Man number 2. It's actually a variant cover by Takeshi Okazaki. This is insanely
this
cool
cover
because...
cover rules.
Yeah. Go to aptcomics.com to see the full cover. You can actually see a slice of it also in the feature image here. But Spider-Man is literally like spraying his liquidy webs almost right into her face. His fingers are almost touching us. The amount of energy that's coming out at us because of the speed lines behind him, but also like there's a bit of a blur to his foot. He's rendered in this like, you can just see the agility too.
Yes.
His bendability, the spidiness of him is very apparent. It embodies like the balled up energy of Spider-Man and how fast he's coming at us. Mm-hmm. And that suits the title very well.
And that picture just, I mean, the kinetic energy in this image just tells you as soon as he connects with whoever he's about to punch, they're done. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're in trouble. Very much so. I do know what you mean.
You do.
What is your favorite cover?
My favorite cover of the week for next week is Batman the Detective number 1. There's a Brian Bolland retro variant that just rules. And I got to say, again, this is a total nostalgia thing for me, but the styling on the logo is a throwback to like the Alan Grant, Mike Barr, you know, Norm Breyfogel era of Batman and Detective Comics. And it just looks so cool. I love the little corner box with the classic DC logo and the, you know, blue and gray bat suit. And this pose is just so awesome. It's him in his inexplicable European bat suit swinging in front of a church. And it just... And there's a wanted poster for Harley Quinn way in the background. this is another thing that just like hits all of the sweet spots for me and the things that I get excited about when it comes to Batman.
Do you think Bolland started with the tower or with Batman himself?
I want to say maybe the tower. There's this...
Because it's sort of the focal point, right?
Right, yeah. There's kind of an interesting effect where it feels like Batman is like bouncing out of the, I don't know. The shading on this is just so good.
Yeah. There's nice lighting on the back of them.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah. It's a great cover.
Moving on,
that's what it's all about.
the great covers.
Yeah.
In our next segment, Philip mm-hmm. Kennedy Johnson will join us for a little interview about aliens. All sorts yeah. of aliens. Big ones, small ones. Some as big as your ears. Head. Damn, we almost got it. And on with us is Philip Kennedy Johnson. You've done so much of late, but also in the last year. Thank you so much for being on the APT Comics podcast.
It's my pleasure, guys. Thanks so much for having me on.
So congratulations. I mean, there's a lot going on right now, but, you know, Killer Man last year, The Last God. You're heading into 2021 with Alien. We've got Carnage coming out, Extreme Carnage Alpha. Superman, of course. How do you approach the page with so many universes in mind?
I mean, honestly, it comes down to just loving comics and having read a lot of different kinds of books, you know, like the approach that I took when I first got into writing mm-hmm. was just trying to emulate my heroes, you know, like I had such clear opinions about like who my favorites were, who I really admired, who I tried to ape in my own work, you know?
Sure.
And even now I kind of approach it to some degree. I still do that. Like I feel like now I have more of a voice than I did then, but, I still have these books that I go back to and read kind of often, like just every year, there's certain books that I go back to all the time just to sure. remind myself what you can do with the medium, you know? And, it's, if you're offered a, like if I was writing just, if there were no big two, you know, if the superhero thing had just never really happened and I was just mm-hmm. writing strictly my own stories.
Yeah.
There's certain kind of things I would do that it might not ever occur to me to do a story like Carnage. You know, it's not something that necessarily like spoke to me just on a, you know, I don't read a lot of books about Carnage, but when mm-hmm. they offered me that gig, it gave me the opportunity to go back and read a lot of stuff that's been done on the character. I do have some things that I do have some Carnage books in the house. And plenty of Venom stuff written by various writers over the years. And it gave me a chance to go back and read work by writers I really admire and nice. just find stuff about the characters that I love, you know, and just try to, you know, leave my stamp on it in a way that hopefully readers will connect with.
What is one of the books that you do go back to and reread every year?
For big two type things, I go back to Scott Snyder's Court of Owls a lot. I think that's yeah. That's like a masterclass on how to start off a run, mm-hmm. How to make what is ostensibly just a superhero, you know, punch him in the face kind of book and make it really engaging and
right.
add this big mystery and these levels, just make it so much more than that. It's just so goddamn well done. And the same for Bendis's New Avengers run that he did. It was just so incredible.
Sure.
Outside of the superhero space, I go back a lot to Day Tripper, to what's another one? This is more in more recent years, but the David Rubin, Santiago Garcia interpretation of Beowulf is friggin' incredible.
Yes, absolutely.
That's one of my favorite books, favorite comics of all time.
That's one I need to revisit for sure.
God, it's incredible. my favorite thing is Monsters. Raises the bar.
It is amazing, like returning to that work, because as you age, your relationship to the work changes too, right? It's not just the work that you find new things in, but you yourself, your own persona is changing over time.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, my own perspective on it.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah. Those are a few of the ones I go back to a lot. Like, there's certain runs of Hellblazer I really like. There's Hellboy that I love that whole run. I've got the whole library edition of Hellboy, and I go through that from time to time.
Nice.
So yeah, lots of stuff.
Well, you just started. The new Alien series from Marvel. What do you think is the key to the lasting appeal of the Alien franchise? I mean, you talk about stories we come back to from time to time. Why? How has it managed to intrigue audiences for like four decades now?
Man, it's kind of a moving target. I think in the beginning, it was all about. I mean, the simplicity of the approach, but also the design, the Giger design of the Alien mm-hmm. itself. Is to me what made it so special, like out of the gate. That and if you go back and watch that, I wish I could watch that movie for the first time again, man. Because now yeah. it's such an inherent part of who I am. I can't imagine seeing the chest burster for the first time. I don't remember not knowing that was coming. You know,
mm-hmm.
like if you saw the movie for the first time now. I mean, every so often, there's just this huge mind-blowing moment. Like when they first go into the derelict and find the space jockey,
mm-hmm.
And then when they see the eggs and they open, and then when you see the friggin' thing on his face and the ship, and then the chest burster, and then you see the alien itself for the first time, like every one of those moments was like this holy shit. Like, I mean, the whole way, like there's not just one big page turn reveal where you're like, oh my God, my life has changed. It's like, it was like five of them like that in the movie, just one after the next. And that next movie, I mean, raised the bar in a super cool way and developed it and gave you the whole nest and the all the emotional stuff with the characters that we didn't get quite to that degree in the first movie and the queen, and like there's the awesome moments, but there wasn't that huge like holy shit thing that just kept happening in the first movie.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I do envy people who get to watch stuff like that later in life, because like when you watch when you're young, it's a different experience than someone who's older. But yeah, no, you know, it's interesting. We know there's a Star Wars story group. Is there an alien story group that you have to check off with before you start writing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like the stuff that I send in, the editors look it over, and then they send it to 20th Century, and they look it over too, just to make sure that it's kind of in line with what they're doing. Because you know there's a show coming out and we want everything to be canon. You know, I personally want everything to be canon from now on, because there's a big question of whether the Dark Horse books are all canon now, and I feel like the question has to be no.
Just
because there's so many things that kind of don't line up with things that have been coming out in the movie since then. I mean, we've seen before Prometheus, we had these different takes on the space jockey and that race, like these elephant people that we know now is not a thing, and you know, stuff with the royal jelly and all that, it doesn't really, I mean, the movie's never expressly disproved that or anything. It just doesn't fit. There's all these things that just totally don't fit with the films. And they've even completely walked back Alien 3 in the comics, too. So
you
can kind of choose your own adventure in that way, like which one can.
That's fine.
And honestly, even now, I question whether or not Alien 3 will remain canon forever, even in the films.
Right.
I mean, we'll see, but
or even Alien Resurrection, right?
Your voice to God. I'd be nice. That's the one that I can't get through now.
I have to say, like reading Alien 1, your first issue, like I got that brooding, unnerving sense from the narrative, and I feel like that is a very important aspect to Alien that some people may not remember or, you know, see as important as it really is. Because with so many of these horror action movies these days, it's like, it's about the gore or like, you know what I mean? Like the big moment. But then, like you said, there's all these multiple big moments. It didn't hold back.
Yeah, totally. I'm trying to capture that. I mean, it's really, the appeal is in part with just how iconic, visually iconic the Giger alien is.
Yeah.
A lot of it is just its horrifying life cycle. Like the way that it reproduces is just so gross and just invasive and just chilling. Like just it's just so offensive to the eye, just to the soul, to see what it does to you. And it's really hard to capture that. Like it's, now that we've seen it, now that we've seen the chest burster and the face hugger and all that stuff, how do you capture that same feeling without just showing it again? Because I mean, we can't show the same thing over and over, because now we've done it and it's not going to have the same impact.
Right.
So the challenge is to get the same effect on the reader but you know, leveling up in a way that still seems of a type with the films. Like it still feels like canon, you know, and it's hard, but you gotta find ways to do it.
Let me throw out a story idea. A chest burster in Earth, but it's as big as the moon, burst out of the Earth. That one's
you're
free.
Nailing it. Just it kidding. Sounds like the cover for that for the Earth. What was it? Earth something.
Well, there was. It reminds me of that first teaser trailer for Alien 3, where they were promising it was coming to Earth, and then it just didn't happen.
Oh yeah, that's right.
There was a Earth. Is it Earth War?
Earth. Oh yeah.
I'm familiar.
Yeah, there was a promo image of. Of the alien's open mouth and the tongue head thing is going straight through the Earth.
Oh right, that's right.
I have to look this up. That's funny.
But yeah, we find ways to hopefully kind of horrify the reader in this first arc once or, you know, a few times hopefully, and I'm constantly trying to chase that feeling. You can't just chase that moment with the chest burster because you've seen it, but you got to find ways to do it, get that same emotional reaction, and it's tricky.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of characters that are huge in canon, I mean, it was awesome seeing Bishop in the first issue.
Oh, thanks. I love it.
It was genuinely like such a huge surprise, like a pleasant surprise. I'm a massive Lance Henriksen fan also. So it was really cool seeing that character.
Thanks. Glad to hear that. I had a lot of affection for that character and I really hated, I like Alien 3 a lot.
Me too. Actually, I'm a defender.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it does legitimately suck that the supporting cast all got taken off the board for kind of no reason. Like you lose them all off camera and that kind of sucks.
Right. Sure. Right.
So I get why people are, always going to be pissed about that. But as far as the story that gives to Ripley, I think it's amazing.
Yes.
But I did hate losing Bishop. It was cool to see him back, kind of, and he just feels there's just that sense of loss from all of those characters that you lose. But for Bishop just as much as the other two, I don't know why, but yeah. It was nice to have the opportunity to bring him back for this.
Well, obviously, you probably want to avoid spoilers, but are there any characters that you wanted to include that you were told were off limits or anything like that?
There was no one else I specifically asked about, but there was, before I even got to it, they said, hey, if you can, characters from the movies are on the table.
Okay.
Just know that using Michael Biehn would be a bigger pain in the ass than the others.
Oh, interesting. That's okay. Interesting.
Apparently he's real touchy about his likeness being used.
Sure.
I shouldn't throw the word touchy in there because I don't really know what the circumstance is. If it's, if it's his personal feelings on it or some kind of a contract thing or what, but for whatever reason, getting him put in a book is a bigger hassle than the other characters in theory.
Wow. Okay.
I don't know why, but, I wasn't really interested in using that character in this anyway. I really I didn't want to commit to either Alien 3 or the other path, just because I don't know what direction the studio is going to go in one day. I like Alien 3, but I know not everyone does, and I feel like there's a chance we could see Ripley again in some other way, and I just don't want to.
Right.
But nobody questions the first two films. Like those two are
gospel.
Oh yeah,
above reproach. Those are always going to be part of it. So I just wanted to rely on those two for now, and we'll as conversations continue with Fox, we'll see.
That's a cozy place to be when you're pulling from two of the great movies.
Yeah, exactly. Like I really like the Prometheus stuff too, and I feel confident that those will also remain canon because Ridley Scott made those, and that's just that part matters. I would not hesitate to pull from Prometheus or Covenant either. I think those are also safe, but at least in our lifetime,
those movies are so gorgeous.
Oh my God, I love those movies, man. I don't know why everyone shits on those films. I think they're both great.
People just like to get like hung up on plot holes or little things that might not make sense perfectly and make a mountain out of a molehill. Right.
I mean, with stuff like that is so beloved, like Star Wars, like Alien, like these things that people have just developed these big world building things that people have watched or read and just like poured so much thought and time and love into. They have such strong opinions about what happens off camera or what makes the movies great. When the film makers go in a different direction, it's easy to get real pissed about it. Nothing will ever live up to the first Star Wars trilogy. Right. I mean, like most people have one of the most recent trilogy that they liked, but it's hard to live up to that now. Like everyone's like, man, they mess it up again. Like constantly. It's like, oh, it's not right. It's still not what I wanted. It's not the thing in my head.
Right.
So I know there's going to be some degree of that on Alien 2. And honestly, it means that they're invested and that they give a shit and that's cool.
Right.
So,
yeah, of course.
I imagine there's some pressure. I mean, like writing Superman versus Alien versus soon to be Carnage, like there's different fan bases for all three of these. And I imagine you get different reactions from them. Not to like put you on the spot or anything, but there must be a lot of pressure to do all of this, like holding up our childhoods, Philip.
There is pressure. I never felt a big, honestly, when I said yes to these gigs, one after the next, I was like, maybe this would be the thing that makes me feel super nervous. And I've heard about writers getting these big shots at stuff and just feeling this crushing anxiety about it.
Right.
I have not really felt that way about any of this stuff.
That's great.
Yeah. I've been pleasantly surprised. And part of it is that I just am such a fanboy of these franchises myself.
Sure.
I just feel very confident in the stories that we're telling here. I think for Superman, you've got to have It's got to be an aspirational story. Superman should be an aspirational character. He should be the best of us all the time. And every you're constantly, at least for me, I'm constantly trying to go for that feeling that I can just do anything that I get when I hear the opening fanfare on the 1978 film.
Like
when I'm watching and the credits are sailing overhead, the 3D effect that they do in that film, and the trumpets are blaring, and the then the S-Shield shows up, and you just feel so empowered and just joyful. You know, it's just this incredible feeling. I'm trying to capture that in the books as much as I can. And I feel like as long as I do that, that's the gig, you know?
And it makes it easy because Alien is just like a hopeful story, just like Superman.
So. Totally. Very much the same. Yeah. It's all about the, so Alien is all about capturing this, capturing that same feeling of just gross intrusion that you, that they do in the first movie. And then but also like the second film cast such a long shadow as far as the Space Marine and all that. So there, I know what boxes to tick with Alien too, because I'm as big a fan as anyone ever. And I know they were like, we can send you all the stuff for reference if you need. And I was like, I don't need shit. Like I've got
nice.
I've got it all in my head. I already know everything. I've read all this stuff. I've seen all, I could recite any of the movies except for the fourth one. so I was good to go. And
awesome.
Carnage, I feel like it's such a simpler, I don't know. It's like, that character is so clear and uncomplicated.
Yeah. We were talking on the show a couple weeks ago. Like, he doesn't have like a very complicated backstory. He's like a psycho killer, right? I guess more recently with Absolute Carnage, there's been a little bit more added to him. But
yeah, as far as canon, yeah, there's more to him as far as like the history of the character and the situation that the symbiotes are in now. I'm not to say that the script can't be. It has to be complicated in some ways, but as far as the character itself, you just want him to be as scary as possible, as psycho and unrelatable as possible.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And the tricky thing about that now is that, you know, Cletus Cassidy is Carnage. And it's hard to imagine Carnage with any other host.
Yeah.
But Cletus is dead as hell. Like he's not just dead. He's like
super dead.
he's so dead. It would be weird and kind of, it would make it seem fake if we found a way to bring him back. It would just be like, man, you're really reaching to do this. He's like bones and dust. Like there's nothing.
Right.
So, but we found a way, I think, to capture that same psycho and make him scary in kind of a different way, but still make it feel like very much like Cletus.
Nice.
So, it's hard to imagine Carnage without Cletus in there. And now with the stuff that Donnie added with the codexes and all that, like we know that Cletus is in there somewhere, which kind of makes it easier in that regard.
I have to ask, this concept of an event via one shot is interesting. Was that your idea?
No, actually. So when you say one shot, are you talking about the Alpha issue?
The Alpha issue, but also the Scream issue and the Phage issue are also one shots, right? I think.
Yeah, I didn't know what had been announced yet.
Okay, those two were announced on Friday. Yeah.
Honestly, I kind of didn't want it announced that way. Because, I mean, yes, each one does focus on a specific character, but there's also this through line that connects all the issues.
Oh, okay.
And there's more than just these three or four, whatever they announced.
Gotcha.
Like, it'll continue for a little bit. And each one does focus on a symbiote, but there's also a lot of other characters that it kind of drives the story forward as it introduces. Like, each issue will introduce a new piece to the board while also moving the other pieces around that we've met already.
Nice. Yeah. Marvel's also doing something sort of similar with the Black Cat Infinity story. Destinies, I think. Infinite Destinies, I mean, with the annual issues, right? Like there's these sort of like chapter breaks, but it's also all connecting at once.
I don't know, actually. Forgive me. I'm actually a little behind on my DC Marvel reading, aside from the stuff I'm doing for research. I'm kind of drowning in work, so I'm not sure what else coming out right now.
Oh, yeah. Understandable. Oh, totally. Yeah. And it's not even out yet, so.
Oh, cool. Okay, good. This event, I'm really stoked for you to see who else is on the series. Honestly, there's going to be different creative teams on each one of the issues, and then I'm doing another one later on in the series as well. Yeah, the Alpha issue kind of gets everything rolling, gets the event in motion.
Yeah,
and you'll see where it's all heading right from the first issue, and then the other ones are kind of that voyage to that final issue where it all kind of like where all hell really breaks loose, and I'm really stoked for everyone to see where it goes.
Is the last issue beta? Because I brought this up earlier to Nathan, and I'm not sure.
I don't want to say.
Okay, all right, that's fine. We do know Flash Thompson is coming back. That was officially announced as well.
Yeah, good. That's a cool reveal. I when they sent me the issues, the most recent, I had to get caught up on the King and Black stuff. There was so much King and Black on the shelf that I was not caught up on all of it. And so I got to see a couple issues I did not realize had not come out yet. So then I was like, I wrote something about it online. And then I was like, you know, these are all PDFs. I wonder if these are actually online yet. And I checked and they weren't. I was like, oh, okay.
Nice. Crisis averted.
Careful about this stuff. Yeah, that would have been bad. But yeah, so now we know Flash Thompson's out there, and which is super cool because I really liked the Flash take on Venom. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, for sure. Developed the character in a cool way.
It's cool to see that character get developed in such a neat way, and I can't wait to put him in the book.
Mm. Well, switching gears back to Alien for a moment, what is the collaboration process like with Salvador LaRocca?
He's fast, man. He's a fast artist. I feel like I'm being chased like the whole time.
where's the next script? Damn it.
Yeah, for real. He's fast. He lives in Spain, and so whenever we were working with someone who's overseas, you know, left or right on the map, there's a little bit of, sometimes there can be some delay in communication, like you're sending emails when someone else is in bed and you get them at the end of your day and that kind of thing.
Right.
So we don't talk every day or anything, but I'll send the script, and he's honestly, usually he just takes it and runs with it with no questions, and he'll just start sending in pages.
Nice.
I mean, I try to be pretty specific about stuff in the script, like what kind of, because there's so many different kinds of xenomorphs and all that. Or if there's a bit of gear that I'm envisioning from a specific movie, I'll tell him what I'm talking about.
Oh, cool.
But man, he's a fan too. That dude has got a handful.
Oh, you can tell for sure.
He's got a handful of like mocked up weapons that look legit as hell. Like he owns them, like in his house.
Oh, neat.
Nice.
And I think he had them before the friggin' book started. Like he really digs Alien.
It makes sense. I mean, he was doing Star Wars for so long, and that is another licensed property where you kind of need that hyper close, you know, reality imagery that connects with the actual film.
Yeah. No, he's great. He's obviously been dealing with the licensed stuff for a long time on Star Wars. And I first saw his work on Iron Man years ago.
And, Iron Man was really good. Yeah, I love that one.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a cool run. Yeah, he's a seasoned pro.
I don't want to put you on the spot here, but do you have a favorite symbiote? You don't have to say Carnage. Marvel may not be listening.
Yeah, I'm sure no one's listening. Honestly, I mean, it sounds bullshitty, but honestly, Carnage is it's a really cool one. I really like Carnage. I love how iconic that combination of symbiote to host became. Because, I mean, you can have Venom without Eddie, and we have for a long time. And I love that we've seen these different takes on Venom. But I mean, now we're going to see Carnage, spoilers, without Cletus, but not without Cletus because of the Codex thing, the fact that he's still in there.
Right.
It still feels very much like him. Like he's having so much fun while he's slaughtering as many people as he can all the time. Right. He's kind of like the Joker in a way more just amped up way, in a much more physical, visceral way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just a more physical, like just Joker with more physicality kind of. Just reveling in the violence at all times. So yeah, Carnage just makes a lot of sense to me. And I really like the Flash Thompson Venom. I thought that was awesome take. I really like that run a lot.
Yeah, it developed the character in a different way. When you're taking on a story like this, did you meet with Donny Cates, or did they offer you the idea of it, or how did that work, the trade-off?
They offered me the idea of it, kind of. They're like, hey, we thought about you for this. It's cool. We'd like you to kind of show run this writer's room for this series that we're going to do.
Awesome.
And actually, Donnie and I had not met about it.
Gotcha.
And yeah, I read everything he did for it. And there's a little bit of a handoff there, of course, but there's not. I read another thing that he has coming up that I needed to be aware of to do this, because it kind of ties in.
Right.
But aside from that, no, Donnie and I haven't really been in contact over this. They were like, hey, would you want to do this? Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, dude, I'd love to. They're like, awesome. We need it by like Monday.
That's funny. We've had Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nadler on, and they were saying like the comparing Marvel to like indie, like Marvel is like running a sprint with a lot of these scripts.
Yeah. Oh my God. Totally. It's all even comparing Marvel to DC, they just do business differently. It's very, just a different way of doing things. And a lot of it is like, you do get some shorter turnarounds in Marvel for sure, but there's like this kind of There's also a lot of hands-on, like a lot of conversations happening the whole time. It's not like they just cut you loose. They also talk to you throughout the process. And yeah, I don't know. There's just a different culture of both places. It's very interesting.
It is interesting. Sure. Yeah.
So we've seen Superman versus Alien before. How about Carnage versus Alien? Who do you have coming out on top here?
Oh man. Well, it depends, right? Because I mean, usually if it's Alien singular,
sure.
It's only scary if you're kind of like locked in there with it, right?
Right.
True. If you're in the streets of New York and it's like one xenomorph, I mean, that sucks, but it's not like
it's being, not insurmountable.
Yeah, it's not like being in a submarine with it or something.
Right.
So if you're Carnage and there's a xenomorph there, I think you're good. But if you're like in the hive, you know,
yeah,
I don't know. Both of them have this unknowable, unkillable quality, and it's just sure. kind of hard to like. You can mow down a bunch of xenomorphs, but there's always that one you don't see, or there's the eggs in a place you don't see, or there's the spore in the ground that you step on, or you know, it's right. just that you can never quite. You can never completely fumigate the house. You know, there's always that.
That's funny.
Sure.
So yeah, it's just such different. It would be really that would be a hard book to do. Like it would be, I don't know, just such different vibes to both those right. characters. It would be tough.
Phil, earlier today, I was thinking the three main titles you're doing at the big two right now are all Alien books.
Yeah. <Right?
laughs> If I went back 25 years to when you were 5 years old. and I said, you're going to be writing all the premier Alien books in 2021. What would you say to me?
I'd be like, I'm ready.
Let's go. Pull up your sleeves.
The stuff I was reading, the games I was playing, and just the life I was living. I was prepping. I was prepping for it even then. Yeah,
that's awesome.
I've been running my whole life for a race I never knew was coming.
I wonder if there's another Alien you could do. I'm trying to think. I guess Martian Manhunter is on the table.
Yeah, he's a great one. I really like the book that Steve Orlando and Riley Rossmo did. That was a really cool run.
So great.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, are there any other projects you want to discuss or anything you want to plug today?
Oh, God. Well, I'm not going to be... I just want to make everyone aware that I'm not going to be writing both Superman titles for forever going forward. I'm going to be jumping off of one of them pretty soon here. Mm-hmm. But the other one I'm going to be writing for... the foreseeable future, like quite a while.
Nice.
And that one's going to be building up to this really awesome, I mean, gigantic event.
That's exciting.
I can't wait to show everyone, man, but it's so like if any of y'all read The Last God,
mm-hmm. yeah.
And just the insane hours I put into the world building on that book.
Yeah,
sure.
I'm doing that all on Superman too. I'm putting just unthinkable hours into Action Comics, just blowing out that world. And I kind of took a hold of this little corner of the DC universe and we're just making it so much bigger and older and
that's exciting.
More epic. I just can't wait for people to see. So yeah, I'm really excited for the Superman stuff we have coming up. Let's see.
What might we get a Superman source book?
I actually am writing an ancient language for DC.
Oh wow.
Whoa.
That every writer after me is going to curse my name.
That's such a hassle
to write. It's more like every sentence is like a rune tree. It's like a rune that grows and changes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's more like it's like making a star map or something.
Yeah. That's cool.
And I would love to at some point put out a thing that actually teaches people how to read it.
I got to tell you, I sent the Last God source book to my dungeon master and I was like, could we try this out? And he was like, yeah, maybe after our campaign. But it's been almost like a year, I think, since that. So I guess our campaign won't end ever. But no, yeah, I was impressed by that. That was really well done.
Well, thank you, man. Yeah, I wrote all the running text in that. We brought in Dan Telfer.
Yeah.
To do the stats and stuff, like all the little gaming mechanics. Like he's the pro with that, and I don't know those things as well. But yeah, all the world building stuff is all straight out of Last God. There's a lot of things in there that I wanted to put into the book that there just wasn't space for in 12 issues. Mm-hmm. So they did DC Daily did a campaign in Cain and Noon in the world of Last God, and it was so fun to see, man. Just to see people add their own stuff to the canon.
Right, right, yeah. Playing in your
I
world.
Love that idea. I love the concept that there's that world is growing now without my help. You know, the fact that it's kind of taken on a life of its own. That was always the goal. I just it was so rewarding to
see
that. It's
such an untapped area in comics. Like, I could see Marvel going in that direction with source books of all sorts, but I don't know if the market's big enough for it.
It would be so fun to do that with, like, the Conan stuff, the Hyborian Age. Like, that would be so rad.
Yeah, it would. I think we're both Conan fans, right, Nathan?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm reading the, I'm not caught up. I'm reading the Jim Zub stuff now, and it's great. Yeah. The Jason Aaron run was so incredible.
Yes. Oh yeah, Nathan just reviewed the latest trade. I love that. Like there was like a casino issue or something. I love that.
Oh yeah,
that was really good.
Yeah, I just got out of the where I am now. They just got out of the Crucible, and that,
oh,
that
that's
was really,
a great that's a great arc. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really well done. The art is fantastic. I love that artist.
Absolutely.
I forget the guy's name, but man, it's terrific.
No spoilers, but would Conan maybe show up in Extreme Carnage?
No. There's nothing. Yeah. There's
that would be wild, wouldn't it?
I wish I could reveal more when the first issue comes out. I'm going to go ahead and tell people what my pitch for it was. When I came back to them with the pitch,
oh cool,
it was Carnage meets, and then there's like the name of a specific movie.
Oh,
and it's not one that you would associate with Carnage ever.
Interesting.
But once you think about it, you're like, oh my God, I totally get it. I can't wait to reveal. Like, I'd love to come back on the show actually and talk about it. And
oh, we'd love you back.
That'd
on
be great.
July, whenever that is.
Yeah, July. Yeah, it's in July. Moving on to our last segment, Off Topic Top Shelf. Phil, can you tell us what you're into right now that's not comic book related? It can be like a TV show or a new hobby you took up, anything like that. Just can't be comics related.
Oh man. Homeschooling.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's a well, big
yeah, like trying to homeschool my son. Let's see. I've been an MMA fan forever, and with COVID I haven't really been sparring with anyone, but I still work a bag all the time, and I'm up until this past week I had surgery this past week, so I haven't been lifting this week, but I've been lifting like a madman whenever I can.
Oh, sure.
Let's see.
I said that like I'm very active, but I have really slowed down with all of that during COVID as well.
Well, it's hard, dude. I had to get it done. I had to put together a pretty legit home gym, and I make it so that I can just kind of go downstairs whenever I have like a half hour free.
Sure.
Like I have to, usually I'll work each muscle group individually. I'll do like 30 or 40 minutes on each muscle group. So I'll do like maybe two a day, but they're short, like 30 to 40 minutes. And I just knock it out and get back out. Cause if I try to set aside 2 hours or something,
yeah,
I can't find the time.
Have you found it's super expensive? Cause like I quit my gym, but I just to buy 2 40-pound dumbbells, it was like $140.
Right.
Yeah. That's honestly better than I expected to hear. Like it's,
oh really?
Yeah. That's terrible right now. Like there was a time not so long ago in the before times when it was like basically $1 a pound.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's like, depending on what kind of plates you're getting, if you're getting plates that go on a barbell, you're paying anywhere from $2 to like $3.50 a pound.
Oh, sure.
So it's super insane. Annoying.
It is.
But I already had a lot of that stuff, but I've been kind of just hunting for stuff that's a little bit cheaper. And finally, I just kind of bit the bullet. I paid too much for a handful of plates. So now I'm good to go. But
right. Once you're done, like getting the weights you need for the time, it's like, oh, okay. Don't have to worry about that anymore.
Right. Exactly. It's stronger until you shell out another $200.
Yeah. Just don't make huge gains. Then you could save money.
Stop leveling up.
Yeah. That's kind of my answer. I've been trying to make time to watch TV. I kind of limped my way through the Zack Snyder Justice League and liked it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What else I've been watching? Not very much, honestly. I still have not yet started Falcon Winter Soldier. I really want to.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just haven't, like, I've been just drowning in work, but that's about it right now. Just doing a lot of reading for research, and some of that I can't actually reveal yet, but
sure.
Yeah, there it is.
Oh, that's good.
Awesome, man.
I multitask a lot with my son. So,
sure.
You know, so he and I have like a list of stuff we try to get done every day.
Uh-huh.
And often he just wants to play all day long, which is oh, awesome. I love it. And we just kind of try to make things fun. So, so he and I will go for a run, but that whole time we're running, we're playing. Like we're pretending to be the Mandalorian and his made up Mandalorian.
Oh, that's fun.
That's awesome.
We're chasing down stormtroopers, or I'll be a stormtrooper for a while. We'll, you know, when we're on the playground, we're playing, you know, Odd Squad or, you know, whatever he wants. We'll make up these games that go along with whatever we're doing. If we're doing jujitsu, we're were actually what he calls Injustice 3. He watched me play Injustice 2 at some point. So we make up another one where it's DC versus whoever.
That's awesome.
And so we'll be learning, you know, Batman will be trying out moves on, you know, Thor or whoever. And yeah, everything we do becomes a game. You know, that's every day. Honestly, when I'm not working, every day is, okay, how do I get this thing done with my son, but yeah, also get in his playtime where he doesn't feel like he's just been working all day. Yeah, it's been really cool. So yeah, he's the stuff with my boy is a big part of each day.
So Philip, thank you so much for being on the APT Comics podcast. Superman comes out next week. We also have Extreme Carnage coming out in July. And yeah, this was a blast.
Oh man, it's super fun for me. I'll come back on anytime.